The true story just happened about 2.5 weeks ago. There's a Frum fellow, lives in the Upper West Side of Manhattan, lives in a fairly nice building. 2.5 weeks ago, he notices as he's entering his building, there's a crazy amount of police presence. Tremendous police cars at the end of the block, mamish outside his building. He had armed guards. Never saw this before. Walks into his building, gets into the elevator going up. He's in the elevator with another guy and says, "You know, buddy, do you know what the story is with all this police in front of the building?" He says, "Actually, I do." He says, "It's because of me." He says, "Because of you. Who are you?" He says, "Well, it's not really who I am, but my father is the king of Morocco. He's in for the UN meetings, and he wants to come and spend time with me tonight." He says, "You live in this building?" He says, "Penthouse apartment." They start talking about, "There's the Prince of Morocco in his building." They're in the elevator together. And he says to the prince, "You know, wow, what that must be, the son of a king." And the Prince of Morocco says to him, "You know, would you like to meet my father later tonight?" He's like, "Yeah, that would be amazing." He's like, "Can I bring my son?" He says, "Yeah, sure, bring your son, no problem." They exchange cell phone numbers, and a little while later, this Jew gets a text. "Meet me in the penthouse apartment, 8 o'clock, you have an audience with my father, the King of Morocco." So they go up to the King of Morocco, the father and son, opportunity, there's a bracha that you make when you see a king, shechalak mechvodo lebasar v'dam, really excited about it. And they go in, and of course security checks them out. They go into the king and they start schmoozing. And the king is very much taken by the boy, the son. Very, very bright, very, very sharp. And the king says to the boy, he goes, "How old are you?" He says, "I just turned 13 last week." He says, "You just turned 13 last week?" King says, "Isn't 13 a very significant age for a Jewish boy?" And he said, "Yeah, actually, it was my bar mitzvah last week." The king of Morocco says, "Mazel tov, what gift are you getting from your father for your bar mitzvah?" Boy told him, "Actually, we're going to Israel to meet the greatest rabbis of our generation. I wanted blessings from them before the high holidays." King was blown away. King was blown away that this is what a 13-year-old kid wants, is a bar mitzvah present. King schmoozes a little bit more with them, and then wishes them a good year, mazel tov again, shalom al Yisrael. The next day, this yid coming back from work, him and his son are getting ready to go to Eretz Yisrael, mamish, one of these whirlwind trips, like 3 days, have lined up all the gedolim, who they're going to when, Nahariya, Bnei Brak, Yushalayim, all over. And he goes into his mailbox, and he notices there's a letter without postage, official letter, envelope from the King of Morocco. He opens it up. There's a check to his son for $50,000. Memo, bar mitzvah gift, 50 grand. This Jew is like, "Oh God, what did I get myself into here?" He calls up the prince immediately. He says, "Listen, you don't understand. A bar mitzvah gift is like $18, $54. If you're really wealthy, want to blow him away, can give $500 to a bar mitzvah boy for a present. Bar mitzvah boy doesn't get $50,000. Mom, $50,000 as a bar mitzvah present." The Prince of Morocco tells him, "You're right. Maybe a bar mitzvah boy doesn't normally get more than 18, 54, at most 500. But this isn't about your son. The King of Morocco doesn't give anything less than $50,000. He says, "Okay, thank you so much." They go to Eretz Yisrael. Maybe they upgrade the business, I don't know. But they go to Eretz Yisrael. Their first stop is by Reb Chaim Knievsky Shlita, the Sar HaTorah in Bnei Brak. And they're telling everyone, they meet the Maisa, the guy who's bringing them into Reb Chaim. They tell him the Maisa, they say, "Tell this Maisa to Reb Chaim. Hilchah Panah. tell it to Reb Chaim. Say, tell Reb Chaim Knievsky the Maisa. Reb Chaim Knievsky has a big smile. He goes, now I understand Pshat. Now I understand Pshat. Avinu Malkeinu, Asei Limancha Imlo Limaneinu. Reb Chaim Knievsky said, what we deserve maybe is $18, $36, $54. But the Melech Malchei Hamlochim doesn't give anything less than millions and millions, than life, than health, than Parnassa. It's not what we deserve. It's what the King of all kings has to give. The Chassam Sofer says an amazing thing about why we fast on Yom Kippur. He says, we don't fast to hurt ourselves. We don't fast to afflict ourselves. The Chassam Sofer in his Drashas Chelek Aleph, believe Daf Kuf Samach Tes, says the reason why we fast is because we want to be like Moshe Rabbeinu. Lechem lo achalti mayim lo shosisi. Moshe Rabbeinu is up getting the Luchos Rishonos when he goes up for the Luchos Shnios, 40 days, 40 nights each time. He doesn't eat a crumb, he doesn't drink a sip. The Chassam Sofer says it's not a lashon inui of affliction, but it's a lashon of hisorus, of awakening us. And you know what we're woken up to? You know what we wake up to on Yom Kippur? That for 25 hours we are lifnei Hashem. Just like Moshe Rabbeinu on Har Sinai was lifnei Hashem, and because of that he didn't have to eat, he didn't have to drink. For 25 hours, we are all going to be lifnei Hashem. You know what we're going to be doing for those 25 hours, lifnei Hashem? You know how we set the tone? We set the tone. It's a story, of course. Story I told, I think, some of you. I think I told some of you the story last year. But if I don't remember it, you don't remember it. That's the general klal. Right? As a shul rabbi, if I don't remember if I said the vart, you certainly don't remember if I said the vart. Story maybe you might remember. It's a story that I've heard different versions. I'm going to tell you the version that I think, based upon the research that I could do, is the most authentic. That there was a guy, from guy who was taking the Metro North from Penn Station back home in Connecticut, worked in finance in Midtown. Every day, the Metro North, you know, the LIR goes to Long Island, New Jersey Transit, obviously, to New Jersey. Metro North takes you north out of the city, takes you into Riverdale, Westchester, and then to Connecticut. He gets onto the train, he opens his briefcase, takes out his laptop, lowers the tray, starts working, and he notices that the guy next to him is really antsy. The guy next to him can't sit. It's like, got a lot of nervous energy. He looks at him, he says, buddy, you okay? He says, yeah, I'm fine. 5 minutes go by, the guy's leg's like a jackhammer. Guy's leg isn't stopping, going up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. He's like, buddy, what's going on? He's like, I'm fine. I'm good, I'm okay. After another 5 minutes, this guy opens his briefcase, takes out a water, takes out a bag of chips. He says, do you want something to eat? Do you want something to drink? Guy's like, I can't eat, I can't drink. I'm too nervous. He puts his arm around him. He says, tell me what's going on. And this is what he tells him. He tells his middle-aged finance guy that he grew up in a nice suburb up in Connecticut. He grew up in a well-to-do, very comfortable family. And as a 16-year-old in school, he was always what you would call a real computer whiz. And in the early 90s, a guy who's a real computer whiz, when there was something called a tech bubble, a guy who's a real computer whiz could make a lot of money. He was 16 years old in high school, junior year, and he started making a lot of money. A lot of money. He basically gave up on school, barely graduated junior year, senior year getting into fights with his parents. They wanted him to stay, to go to college. He's like, I'm making hundreds of thousands of dollars. Why do I need to go to college? And huge fights between him and his parents. When he finally makes his first million, he says, that's it, he's done, he leaves home. Parents are so upset, he buys a Lamborghini, mamish. He starts making more money, he buys an apartment, Central Park West. Beautiful view of the greenery of Manhattan. And his parents are so broken. They're in touch, but this girlfriend he got was mamish a disaster. The parents are pleading with him, don't you see? She mamish doesn't care about you. The fact that you can shower money on her is what she cares about. She mamish doesn't care about you. And a huge fight with his parents back and forth. Ad kedei kach, that they have this huge blow up. When the parents took him out to a restaurant in Manhattan, huge blow up. He said horrific things to his parents. I never want to see you again. Stay out of my life. When he actually got married to this girlfriend who was pregnant, not only did he not invite his parents, he hired security in case his parents would find out and try and come to the wedding, they would not be allowed in. When he had his daughter, he doesn't know how, but somehow his parents found out about it. I guess enough people were in touch with both of them. He did not allow his parents to see their first grandchild. He didn't want to have anything to do with it. And then after a few years of this type of living, the tech bubble burst. Stocks that were flying high, mamish became pennies on the dollar, if that, pennies on the $10. This guy whose net worth was in the millions was barely in the 100,000s. All the investments that he made with these friends were obviously nothing. Mamish was just giving away tens of thousands of dollars, if not more. Parents were right that when his net worth plummeted, his wife decided that, you know what, she really wasn't in love with him, filed for divorce, took the apartment, took most of the assets, and this guy is on the Metro North train telling this total stranger, for the past 3 months, I've been homeless in Central Park. Most of the time I'm panhandling outside the building that I just had a gorgeous apartment in less than a year ago. This middle-aged guy, this finance guy, is just like totally, totally taken by the story, what's going on. And he said, I have to be honest, I was so low, it was hard to find reason to go on. But he said, a few days ago, I had this crazy thought. The parents that I rejected, the parents that I threw away, that I was so disgusting to, maybe they would take me back. He said, I took 50 cents that I begged. I called my house number, throwing up answering machine. Parents weren't even there. I left a message for my parents telling them that if they would be willing to let me in, I would want to come home. I told them on the machine that they were right. My wife left me. I've lost my money. I'm living in a park. I told them that I got enough money. I was buying a ticket for the 545 Metro North to come home. And if they'd be willing to allow me back into their house after everything I'd done to them, that they should just hang a single white handkerchief from the oak tree that hung over the station. He turns to this middle-aged guy, looking like a wreck. He goes, what happens if I don't see the handkerchief? He says, I have no idea what I'm going to do. He says, I might just stay on the train. He says, which stop is yours? He says, two more. And that's why he was just getting more and more nervous. The guy was just getting more and more nervous. Until finally, when it's the next stop, is his stop, The guy, Mom, is just sitting in his chair, crunched over. He's shaking violently. And he says, I can't look out the window. I can't bear to look out the window. He says to the middle-aged stranger next to him, do me a favor. Tell me whether or not you see the handkerchief. What do you see outside? The middle-aged financier tells him, lift up your head and look for yourself. He says, no, I can't. What do you... He said, lift up your head and look for yourself. And when he lifts up his head, he sees there are hundreds of white handkerchiefs hanging from the oak tree. Hundreds. The financier sees two middle-aged people, probably not too much older than he was, waiting anxiously for the train to arrive. He saw the young guy next to him get out of the train and run, crying to embrace his parents. When you're going to walk into shul, tomorrow, it's tomorrow night, guys. You're going to walk into shul. What's going to be in front of your eyes? It's going to be a sea of white. We normally don't do that at night. At night, we normally don't have a talis. What's with the kittel at night? Rosh Hashanah was just in the morning. But tomorrow night, you're going to walk into shul, and it's going to be a sea of white. Right there. You know what that white symbolizes? You know what that white is telling us? That for the next 25 hours, Lifnei Hashem Titaru. For the next 25 hours, you are going to be in Hashem's presence, and Hashem is telling you, I know you were disgusting to me this past year. I know you ignored me. I know you spit in my eye time and time again. But guess what? I still love you. And I don't care what you did to me. I want to be close to you. I want to have a relationship with you. That's what Yom Kippur is all about. The opportunity that we have. But we have to understand. Do you know what the opportunity really is? It's not called Yom Mechila. It's not called Yom Selicha, which are the terms that we normally talk about with forgiveness and atonement. Slach lanu avinu ki chatanu, mechal lanu malkenu ki fashanu. We don't talk about kapara every day. And in fact, when you're dealing with other people, you say, you know, you accidentally bump into someone. What do? You go, slicha, slicha. You don't say kapara, kapara. If you say kapara, it's like weird, you know? Guy might think you're trying to do something. Be careful. Don't say kapara to the guy, right? When you go up to someone later today, say you mochel me. You don't say you're mechaper me, you koper me. What does that mean? But yet the day is known as Yom HaKippurim. It's a day of kapara. What's the difference between kapara and slicha mechila? Rav Yisrael Reisman Shlita points out, Rosh Shiva Torah Vadas, look in Rashi. Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Chaf Aleph in Bereishis. In Vayishlach, Yaakov preparing to meet with Esav, Rashi tells us kapara is a lashon of kinuach. You know what kinuach means? It means cleansing. It means wiping it clean. That Yom Kippurim is a day when it mamish becomes all white again. You don't ask a person for kapara. A person can't give you kapara. Because if I hurt your feelings, you could be mochel me. You could say, I don't hold it against you. But can you honestly say that there's not a scar left? There's not a stain? Like someone ever hurt you? And you're fine, I'm mochel you, I'm mochel you. But every time you see the guy, there's still something there, there's a residue. On Yom Kippur, there's no more residue. That's it. The Halakha of Chiddush Erim, the first Gay Rebbe says, you know what, right after Mar, we say, we say, Slach lanu avinu ki chatanu, because we don't really believe that Yom Kippur could do what it is. That's the first oven we have every year after Yom Kippur. You didn't really believe what Yom Kippur could be. Yom Kippur is the day of total cleansing. And that's why when we say v'hu rachum yichaper avon v'lo yashchis, Rav Reisman suggests, famous pasuk in Tehillim, we say it all the time, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is yichaper avon v'lo yashchis. V'lo yashchis doesn't mean and Hashem won't destroy us. When Hashem gives us kapara lo yashchis means that the sin will not destroy my soul. That the sin won't affect my neshama. I don't care what you looked at this year. I don't care what you did. I don't care the time that you mamish slowly bled away in your phone doing nothing, slow forms of suicide. Telling Hashem, the greatest bizei Torah, Torah's in the corner crying. No, but I want to play Candy Crush. You know, that's exciting, right? Like, come on. Get a life, really. Get Zechrein Lechayim. Life, guys. Come on. V'hu rachum yichaper avon v'lo yashchis yom ha-kippurim means there is no stain on your soul come Motzei Shabbos. You can do what you know is right. You all know what real tov is. You know what you should be searching for. You know what you should be working for. And with the seniors and the juniors, we spoke about this. Tov versus noach. Good versus easy. Don't go for easy. Go for the good. But good is hard. Torah is hard. Living outside of yourself to give to others is hard. But Yom Kippur, make no mistake, Chevra. Yom Kippur is a day when Hashem, Lifnei Hashem Titaru, you're all going to be cleansed, just like the white you're going to see tomorrow night. Hashem, no matter what you did, is waiting to embrace you. You just have to say sorry. You just have to engage in the tshuva process. V'shifchi kamayim libech. Pour your heart out like water. Like water. Do you have time for one more story? Yeah, you sure? One more story, and with this we'll end. It's a quick one. And I know I've told this to some guys here. I know I told it to you, but Chevra, listen to this maisa. It's a guy who went up to Rav Shimshon Pinkus, one of the great tzaddikim, Rahmanul Islam, died in a horrible car crash with a wife and a teenage daughter right before Pesach about 15 years ago. He was born in Brooklyn, Brooklyn bred actually. He had a brother-in-law who was a Rosh Moshe Moshava. He had a brother-in-law who was a Rosh Moshe Moshava, an I.O. for a number of years. But Rav Pinkus was not like a Moshava guy. No, he was a little bit different. And Rav Pinkus was a rabbi in Mamish the Negative, in the middle of nowhere. He used to remember fondly that his first house, Mamish, didn't have a floor. His first house, the floor was the dirt, the ground. That was the dirt. Mom, she had to sweep the ground before Shabbos. And Maisa was that one of the guys in the kolel at Ofakim came to Rav Pinkus and said, Rebbe, can my wife and I meet with you? You know, we've been married a number of years and we haven't been zoche to Zereshel Kayama. We haven't been zoche to have a child. And Rav Pinkus said, yeah, sure. What about tomorrow night, 11:30 at night? Can I come to your house? 11:30 tomorrow night. Okay, sure. Yeah, okay, Rebbe. No, you sure? It's okay. Next night, 11:30, knock on the door. He opens house. Rebbe, please come in. Rav Pinkus says, first get your hat and jacket and meet me downstairs. Tell your wife you'll be back in a few minutes. What? Just get your hat and jacket and come with me. Tell your wife not to wait up. Okay. Tells his wife, change of plans. Comes downstairs. Rav Pinkus is in his car. He says, get in. And they start driving. And they drive out of town. They're on a highway towards Beersheba. He said, maybe he's taking me to some hidden tzaddik that only Rav Pinkus knows about. They get off the highway to a side road, heading to a kibbutz. Well, maybe this is a really hidden tzaddik, you know? And then they get off that side road. The mam is driving in a dirt road in a field in the Negev. For like 5 minutes, the only light is barely the light of a moon and the light of the headlights, and Rav Pinkus stops the car. And he tells the guy, reach into the glove compartment, take out what's in there. It was a Tehillim and a flashlight. Rav Pinkus says, get out. I'll be back in about 15, 20 minutes. The guy says, Rebbe? What do you mean? He's like, I'll come back for you in 15, 20 minutes. Before we sit down and talk about the next steps and doctors, 15, 20 minutes, I'll be back for you. Rav Pinkus comes back 20 minutes later. The guy is sitting on a rock with the flashlight, just like looking around. Rav Pinkus drives the car up next to him and he says, I'll be back in another 20 minutes. And the guy says, Rebbe, what? I don't get it. We're supposed to meet. What do you? I don't get it. Rav Pinkus looks at him and says, I want to give you an opportunity before we talk about next steps, doctors, this, mutter, usser, treatments. I want to give you alone time with the only one that really matters. There's only one that really can help you. I'm going to give you alone time another 20 minutes. He comes back 20 minutes later. The guy's not sitting on the rock looking around with the flashlight. The guy's mamish davening, shuffling. He sees the light back and forth. Rav Pinkus drives up next to him, honks the horn. The guy doesn't stop. Rav Pinkus gets out of the car, calls his name. He doesn't stop. Rav Pinkus nudges the guy's shoulder. The guy turns around. Rav Pinkus sees his whole face. His mom is streaked with tears. Rav Pinkus says, now we're ready to go. Now let's go have that conversation. And that couple was zocheh to have a child a little bit over a year later. The story is how you should be davening on Yom Kippur. That's what Yom Kippur is. You are lifnei Hashem. It's you alone with the Ribon Kol Olamim, the one who will decide everything for next year. And you know when it's all sealed, Chevra? When's it all sealed? It's all sealed at Ne'ilah. Hashem should just help you all to recognize the gift that he's giving you, and don't let it go. Don't waste the greatest gift that you will get this year, a Yom Slicha Mechila, and of course, Kapara. Shkoyach, guys. Gemar Chasima Tova.